for 25 years. Nothing has tasted better after a hard day's work than a Mike's Hard Lemonade. It's because since day one, Mike's has been making lemonade the hard way. We use three kinds of lemons, all hand-picked from family farms, then blended to perfection in cold press to create the epic hard lemonade you know and love. Mike's Hard Lemonade. Hard days deserve a hard lemonade. Mike's is hard, so is prison. Don't drive drunk. Premium all beverage with flavors. All registered trademarks used under license by Mike's Hard Lemonade Company, Chicago, Illinois.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now, you're multitasking. But what if you could also be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. So multitask right now. Get your quote now at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
It was pretty obvious that the Patriot regime felt that it was time for him to move on.
Comments made by Thomas Edward Brady, a 77-year-old insurance company CEO who should know better at this point in his life, doesn't necessarily reflect the views or positions held by his son, Thomas Edward Patrick Brady Jr. So furthermore, should Tom Sr. continue to speak out on behalf of his son without the express written consent, Tom Jr. reserves the right to eventually put him in a home against his will. That's all I have to say.
Damn, Tommy! Wow! Putting Dad in a home!
Boom.
He was joking, I think. I don't know. Tom Brady Sr. better watch his back and his front and his sides. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning.
How are you, Chris?
I'm doing good. I was like one of those days where I was like flustered this morning, right? Like I looked at the clock and I was in my house and it was 6:25 still. I mean, we're on TV at 7 a.m. Eastern. So I was like, oh my gosh, it's 6:25. So I've been like flustered in a hurry ever since.
One thing I've learned is the earlier that I get up, the more closely I cut it,
right?
When I come up here to sit down.
Right.
Because you think you have time.
Yeah, I'm good.
Hey,
right.
Yeah. I'm always up at 6 on Wednesdays. The other days I'll sneak another 15, 20 minutes of sleep. Gone are the days when I feel obsessed about getting a story posted on PFT before the show starts. I'll just tell you that now. I've outgrown that. I've outaged that.
I bet.
But I'm on radio in Charlotte at WFNZ at 6:20 a.m. So I got to get up, get the shower, get shaved, get ready, do that. And then I write a story and I post it. And I did that today. There's a great story. Not that the story's written great. It's an intriguing story about a Super Bowl 51 ring that went for auction for only $92,000.
Wow.
I mean, I know that's a lot of money, but
wow,
for a Super Bowl 51 ring,
right?
My God, I'm surprised there wasn't a bigger bid. But anyway, I'm down. You know, you kind of settle into your routine. I look at the clock and it's 6:53. It's like, holy crap, we're on in 7 minutes.
Yes.
I got to get upstairs. I got to make the long walk upstairs.
The long walk.
I know what you're saying.
And then you
settle into the show.
What age is your son going to put you in a home for speaking out too much against, you know, certain things? When's that going to happen?
Well, I'm surprised it hasn't happened already, frankly.
I'm sure they're working on it.
Yes. Little do I know. And when you find out, you find out. Anyway, maybe I already am. Maybe I already am. And I just don't realize it.
Yeah.
I don't go anywhere.
No, I know. We know.
I mean... Yeah,
we know.
I like it that way.
Did you go in your pool this summer at all? Did you go in there at all?
I never made it.
Oh my gosh! 2 years in a row, you didn't go in the damn pool, man.
It's still open.
Yes, take a dip.
So,
come on,
you can still take a dip.
Yes.
All right. Anyway,
you're like the Vikings. There's always next year. You're good.
Yeah, there's always next year. There isn't next year, though, for Tom Brady returning to New England. That's happening this year. That's happening this week. That's happening in 4 days. So, obviously, and we'd be doing this even if we didn't have the game on NBC. Coverage begins 7 o'clock Eastern on NBC and also Peacock with Football Night in America. But even if we didn't have the game, it would be a big deal. So we're going to spend some time talking about Tom Brady going back to New England from different angles, folks. You haven't heard most of this. And one thing you haven't heard, most likely, is Tom Brady from the Let's Go podcast. The phrase that he usually utters with a third word, a word that Chris is very familiar with, that word is omitted from the title of the podcast. Here's Brady from earlier this week talking about his triumphant or otherwise return to Foxborough this weekend.
When I think of 20 years in one place, you're right. I know that locker room. I know that home locker room. I know that home tunnel. I know, you know, which way the wind blows. I know everything about that. I know the way it smells. I know what a night game's like. I know what the fans are going to sound like. So in some ways, that'll be really unique. I've never had that experience going to, you know, New England will be a first time for me being on the other sideline. So, you know, I'm not going to necessarily reminisce. I don't think this is the moment for that. And I'll have plenty of opportunities to reminisce about my football career. None of which I really care to do right now because I'm so much in the moment. And I'm not going to be thinking about, you know, 20 years of history. I'm going to be thinking about one night of football, a Sunday night game coming off a really tough loss. They're coming off a really tough loss. So both teams are going to be fighting and clawing for a win.
Now, it's easy for him to say all those things.
Yeah.
I'm reminded of what Coach Dungy explained over the weekend. He did the same thing back in 2003 when he returned to Tampa for the first time with the Colts. You say it and you say it and you say it, and then you get there and it doesn't matter what you've said. It's not some other game. It's not some other night. This is a big deal, and he's going to hear it. And Chris, Shereen Williams and I were talking about this yesterday on PFTPM. He's going to hear it twice. He's going to get the ovation at the appropriate time before the game. And at some point in the first or second quarter, when he gets to 68 passing yards,
yeah.
I assume they're going to stop the game. They're going to hand him the laminated sheet of 8.5 by 11 inch paper that says all-time passing yardage record. I wonder if Drew Brees will actually surrender the one that was given to him a few years ago, because Drew will be there.
Yeah, right.
But there's going to be two different moments of emotion. And I don't care what he says. Unless he truly has gone full cyborg, and there is a chance that he has, he's going to have a human moment at some point early in the game.
I would imagine so. I can't even imagine how he's going to feel. I really can't. It's one of those where you go, let me put myself in his shoes and go, okay, yeah, no, I can't put myself in his shoes. This is a special category here. This is Michael Jordan going back to Chicago when he's with the Washington Wizards. I mean, this is different stratosphere of athlete, fame, you know, landmark to the city of Boston and the New England area. I mean, Tom Brady's, he's a star. He's a legend. I mean, that's where, yeah, I have a hard time thinking even Tom Brady, as focused as he is, being able to fight off some emotions early in the game, the way he'll get cheered, like you said, when he runs out for pregame. I think even when he runs out, you know, his first drive of the game, you're going to hear cheers still there as well. You know, the emotions of dealing with, hey, there is Coach Belichick and Josh McDaniels and all these other people in the organization that he's loved for all these years. Mr. Kraft, you talk about the passing yard thing. Yeah, that's one thing. I would think if I'm the Patriots and Bill Belichick too, I'm telling Mr. Kraft to have a tribute to Tom Brady at some point during the game too, to take his mind off the game.
Yes.
Again, and have those emotions.
Yes.
So
all in.
Right?
All in.
All in.
Roll out the red carpet.
Right.
Red carpet on top of
exactly.
It. We love Tommy.
Right.
It's Tommy, Tommy, Tommy. Because they know that if he gets sufficiently emotional, that's a way to mess with him. And it almost makes me wonder, is he going to have some hard shell where he's going to resist it,
right?
Because he doesn't want to give into it. But then he could come off looking like a jerk. But he needs to insulate himself. He needs to work on that and visualize it. That's one thing that Drew Brees said this weekend when he was getting ready to set the passing yardage record, and he knew they were going to stop the game, and he knew he was going to be emotional. So he got all the emotions out of the way the week leading up to the game, so in the moment he wouldn't let that affect him. It's not, and it's going to be so much easier said than done. Chris, you know, the old saying is when you're about to die, your life passes before your eyes. This feels like a moment to me, a living moment where 20 years will pass before Tom Brady's eyes. And everything that he achieved, accomplished, his family developments from kids being born, getting married, just everything that happened in 20 years, it's going to potentially pass before his eyes when he's in that moment, when he's back in that environment. I know when I just like, you know, go up to my hometown and drive around,
yeah,
and it's only an hour away, you feel different. You get emotional. You put yourself back in those days when you were young and you go through your old neighborhood and it feels the same, but it feels weird. And I can't imagine trying to function in an environment like that when you're only doing it one time.
No, I can't either. I really can't. And, you know, Drew Brees' comment was, like, you know, I think very interesting. I mean, the fact that he said he, like, he would get the cry in a big game or anything like that, he'd get the crying out of the way on, like, a Monday or Tuesday before the game. You know, Brady, of course, you know, he's very into mind, breathing, connecting, all of that. You know, maybe he does have meditation moments this week where he tries to visualize himself there and do that. The other thing that jumped out to me is this, Mike, just a little bit, because, you know, of course, I knew we were going to talk about this. And this is just recent. Was our first game of the year in Tampa, of course, with the Dallas Cowboys in town. But, like, I've been in pregame and seen Tom Brady a bunch of times in my life and been on the field, got the great privilege to play against him once, and, you know, he whooped my butt and the Bucks' butt. But he all the times I'd always seen him, it was always business, 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 business. You know, let's even go. Oh. And he was just a man on a mission. And you was one of those guys that you weren't going to go over and like, hey, Tom, what's up? Have a good game today. He gave you the impression like, no, it's business. I'm throwing balls over here. You worry about your business. Maybe I'll say hi to you after the game. I feel like he's in a different place right now. And it really popped to me during the game, that first game of the year, because he just, like we see in his life right now on social media, he just seems very at ease and comfortable. Like, you know, he was talking to a lot of people in pregame. He ran over, of course, to the set to say hi to Tony Dungy and Drew Brees and you know, shoot the crap with them for a few minutes and say hi. And you could tell there was other people he was laughing with and having fun with. And that was a side I had never seen. So maybe he is at this point of his life where he can just relax and embrace it. He knows he's so awesome. The game is so slow. It's mentally not exhausting to him anymore. So maybe where he can just enjoy it. I'm really going to be interested to see the psychology of it when the night comes.
And I think that's a great point. He's so deep into house money with his career.
Yeah.
Right. He's achieved everything that he ever could have set out to achieve. And I know he's always obsessed with getting the next one. What's your favorite Super Bowl ring? It's the next one. He wants to get to 8, and then he'll want to get to 9. Then he'll want to get to 10. That's just how he's wired. But even if it all ended right now, he's got the greatest career of any individual Definitely. Player in league history. The only question is, how much stronger does the debate get as to whether or not he's the greatest athlete ever in any sport? And I think that's still got a few more championships to go before it's a real thing. But it at least is on the minds of some people. And it won't be just Brady who has the past relationship on his mind. There are members of the Patriots organization who may be experiencing some emotions as well as they think about all the Super Bowl rings that they have that they wouldn't have but for the presence of Tom Brady. Let's hear from some of the Patriots assistant coaches who know him so well about what they think of Tom Brady's return.
It should be a lot of fun. You know, we're obviously very good friends and close, and that should never change. And I know he'll be excited to compete and come up here and try to win and play his best game. And we're preparing to try to do the same thing. So, you know, I've coached against a lot of people that we used to coach, a lot of coaches that I've used to coach with. There's always an added sentiment to the game emotionally. I would not expect this game to be any different.
I love Tom Brady. I'll always have. I spent 20 years with the young guy. I am very honored to have played or been a part of the team with him. I still think he's the greatest. But right now, that SOB is the son, is the defense, is on the enemy. So however you put it, he's coming in. He's the enemy. I still love him. I think he's a great person. But I'm not going to be sharing any love when it comes to game time, and we'll share that love afterwards when it's all said and done.
Man, it's truly amazing. You know, he's been playing at a high level for a long time. You know, when you know, we got the depth charts and it said how many years he was playing, I was like, his career alone is old enough to drink. It's crazy.
I'm happy for him, for the success he's had. And I'm looking forward to trying to beat his butt. And that's what counts.
That is amazing to think that Tom Brady's football career in and of itself is old enough to drink, and his football career probably tempted to take a few drinks this week as he understands what it is that's going to be happening. But it will be emotional for a lot of people, but he's the one who's going to be out there, the proverbial literal man in the arena. That really is going to be fascinating to see how he handles it and how he performs and who has the edge there. Where does the knowledge favor one side or the other? Breeze said the other night that he would think the knowledge of Sean Payton and the way he does things would benefit him more than the knowledge of Breeze would benefit Payton. My guess is Payton would say the knowledge that I have of Breeze benefits me more than Breeze's knowledge of me. Either way, it cuts both ways. Belichick knows Brady and Brady knows Belichick. And the question is really who can dupe whom? Who can stop whom? Who can best whom in that handful of plays that we see in any given game?
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting conversation. I think in this type of situation, I do think Brady has more of an advantage of preparing his team for what the Patriots do as compared to the other way around. Yeah, they know Brady. They know, but Brady's, hey, he's playing a different style of football right now than he did when he first, you know, when he was at his end of his career there in New England. And also, it's more about knowing systems and, you know, the route combinations and how the offense works. And so that goes back to now it's, wait, I need to know Bruce Arians and I need to know, Byron Leftwich and what they do more than anything. Yeah, they're going to know Brady, you know, might have some tendencies or something he might look for, you know, on a certain situation. But I think Brady's knowledge of, hey, you know, all my years there in New England, when we were in trips wide receivers to the right and we motioned to the left, they like to check to this coverage. Or, hey, when you see them tap the top of their helmet, that means they're checking to quarters coverage. He's going to be, I would think New England's going to have to worry more about changing signals and little things like that, more than Brady's going to have to worry about them knowing just him. That's at least what jumps out to me. He's going to be able to be underneath the center, and he's going to hear the middle linebacker make calls or tell somebody something and go, I know what that means. I know what they're doing here. And that's where New England, in my opinion, will have to change that. You know, I've heard a lot of great quarterbacks through time talk about that. We played them so much. I got used to their calls. I kind of knew what they were doing. And that's, to me, where he does have an advantage over New England. They'll have to switch signals and be a little bit more, I think, on top of their game than maybe the other way around.
Well, and the reality is it's a cat and mouse situation where Brady has the experience. He's seen it all. The guys on the other side of the ball have seen far less than he has. Most of them have never played against him. Yeah. Plenty of them have never played with him or practiced with him because of the turnover that happens in the NFL. Anybody who arrived in New England since the 2019 season that's on that field doesn't know him. And maybe that's where part of the challenge is this week, getting the players who know him to help impart that knowledge, the things they've gleaned in practice, the things they know that get him rattled. That's the key. The people that know him well. Bill Belichick knows what gets him rattled. The question is, can Belichick do what gets him rattled? The pressure up the middle is what we always hear. But there has to be other things that irk Tom that have bled out at some point Sure. over the last 20 years. And if Bill Belichick's brain is this football supercomputer where he can remember every little detail, he filed away. Surely, at some point back in 2002... he filed away something that he knows pisses off Tom Brady. Because remember, in 2002, they didn't make the playoffs. That was their first year post-Super Bowl. They had struggles. They weren't a juggernaut that year.
Yeah, finished real
strong. At some point,
right? Yeah.
Yeah, but at some point in the 20 years they were together, there had to have been things that Bill Belichick gleaned that he knows drive Tom Brady crazy, and he's going to make sure his guys know to do them this
way. Sure. Yeah, I don't doubt that at all. You're right. Whether it's, you know, certain disguises of coverages, maybe certain blitzes that Brady, he knows, maybe doesn't always see correctly. You know, yeah, there's definitely going to be some sort of, listen, you know, pushing the pocket and getting into Brady's face. Listen, that's a New England teaching point. That's what they do. I mean, that's I think where defending Brady became a thing, because people started to realize, wait, New England does this to other great quarterbacks, and Brady, when he's playing in a big game, of course, New England always does a great job of kind of fanning out the pass protection to where he could step up, and they would always talk about, now it's 7-on-7 for Tommy, right? The rush is out of the way. It's 7-on-7 for Tommy. You're in trouble now. And they were great at that. So I'm sure there's going to be added, you know, emphasis on those little things as we go through the game. You know, it's amazing. I ask you this, like, here's the other thing, you know, because I've worked in New England and, you know, I've seen that firsthand. They don't get caught up in the emotions of the game or anything. It just right. The time I was there, it is no matter what the game was, it was business as usual. It didn't matter if it was against a 1-10 team or an 11-0 team. I was always amazed that it was just, there's no difference in the building today. There's no, you couldn't tell the difference day to day, no matter who, you know, we were playing at that point. And that's where New England is special. You know, Tampa, on the other hand, hey, they're going to know how important it is for Brady. They're going to want to go up there and put a show on for him. You know, I would think Bruce Arians and Leftwich might even want to dial up a few plays. Hey, we're down and close. Let's get Brady some touchdown passes when he's at home. You know, there's that element. So I'm also just, you know, I guess intrigued to see what team is affected by the emotions of the whole game and the surroundings as well.
That was another point that Coach Dungy made about his return to Tampa Bay. The Colts players wanted so desperately to win the game for him, they were off their mark. And remember, that was the game where they were down big.
I was there.
And they had the huge comeback with 5 minutes left. And amazing. That was your rookie year back in
2003. Right.
Yeah. But you've got the rest of the Buccaneers organization that isn't going to want to let Tommy down, because if they lose that game, yeah, he'll say all the right things, but he isn't going to be happy if they end up losing that game, especially if Leonard Fournette fumbles the ball or Mike Evans doesn't get both hands on a pass that he should have caught, or a defensive player has a lapse that allows the Patriots to drive down the field and score. That really will be part of it. I had another idea, too, about how they could really mess with him and get him off kilter. As the various Patriots of the past are there. And that would be another thing to do. Bring back Troy Brown, who's already there anyway. But bring back Richard Seymour. Yeah. Get a bunch of former teammates there to really get him feeling emotions. But on top of all those guys, make sure you find and you bring John Yastrzemski and Jim McNally. Have them hanging around, too. You really want to mess with Tommy?
Oh, my God.
You make sure those guys, who I don't know where in the hell they are.
No, I know.
Maybe that was part of the long play. We're going to hide these guys out until the moment Tom ever comes back. If he ever leaves, if he ever comes back, that's when they're going to be back. They're going to be milling around somewhere, and he's going to see them. And that's going to screw him up. And you know what? I say it only half jokingly. You want to talk about ruthlessness? That would be the ultimate move.
It would be.
If those guys pop up somewhere in Tom Brady's field of vision on Sunday night.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Well, yes, that would be. But I think that's one where New England, for competitive advantages, would draw the line on that one there. You know?
Why? It was all him. Hey, the way that Belichick would tell it, I didn't have anything to do with it. It was all him.
Well, it was.
That mess was made by him.
It was made by him. It's definitely the downfall or the one bad spot of his career, for sure. I mean, there's no doubt about that. So, yes. I mean, hey, listen, there is that. But Mr. Kraft, they're just too indebted to Tom Brady. He's an extension of the family. I mean, Mr. Kraft is the one who confused the whole Deflategate situation anyways. He misinformation, everything, so nobody can know what, oh, I don't know what the hell the scientists are, oh, this is what they're at. The league's telling you, no, they were at this. Scientists are going, no, I broke it down at this PSI. And the league's going, no, it's this. And so it was all confused. They're not going to go there as much as that was a bad spot in you know, his little time there in New England, for sure.
It was a Keystone Cops investigation that failed to find the right evidence that would have proven things conclusively. I think the evidence was out there. The league did a poor job. I wanted to put another word in front of it, of investigating, because there was fire. They just could never really find it.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah,
Look, there's a point where you're going to piss him off, too. That was the word I was going to put before poor. There's a word, there's a point, and there are other words I'd like to say. There's a point where you piss him off if you do something like that. So I'm just kidding about McNally and Yastrzemski.
No, of course you are. I know.
Because then it's going to be 59-0
Well,
if you do that.
Despite all the things where, oh, Brady, Belichick, why is Brady not there anymore, blah, blah, blah. I can promise you, you know, in the heart of hearts, Bill Belichick loves Tom Brady. He loves him. There's no doubt about that. And Josh McDaniels, the same way, has that same love, you know, that Belichick and Mr. Kraft have. You know, Belichick's the general. He wasn't going to always just hug him and make him feel great. We know that. We've had the discussion a lot. But, man, even my time in Denver – with Josh McDaniels 1 year playing there after he left New England and was the head coach with the Broncos. I mean, of course, all the installation tapes we saw, it was Brady. And Josh McDaniels would talk about him, you know, hey, like Tommy would do this, you know, Tommy would do that. Like, it was his little brother, like they were his big brother, you know. So there is real affection there for Tom Brady, the way he handled himself day in, day out, stand-up, ultimate professional, and – you know, I don't think they're looking to take any low blows at a guy they truly do love.
Yeah, that would be a mistake. There's a sweet spot of emotion where you want to really get him feeling like it's nothing but love, even if it's a little passive aggressive.
Yeah, there's right.
A point where it would be too far. Mm-hmm. Yastrzemski and McNally would make it too far. Some would say that his career has gone on for far too long, especially the people that have to play against him. Brady has said on multiple occasions that he will play the next 2 years. He's under contract for 2 more years with the Buccaneers. He has since hinted at staying with the Buccaneers a lot longer than that. Not that long ago, he joked about playing until he's 50. In an interview with the Wall Street Journal magazine, because he was doing a little media push for a clothing line that he now has coming out, as if the guy needs more money. At what point do you just say, enough, I'm just going to enjoy my life. I don't need to make more money. I don't need to do more commercials. I got more money than I could ever spend, or my kids or grandkids or great-grandkids could ever spend. Anyway, the point is, beyond 2022, he says maybe he'll play another year or two after that. Maybe it's a year, maybe it's two. I have to see where I'm at with my family. That's probably the overriding factor, what I'm missing out on. And he also made it clear that he never wants to be at a point where he tells himself, man, I could still be doing it. You know, he doesn't want to stay too long.
Yeah.
But he also doesn't want to stay not long enough. And that's the ultimate regret. I could have played one more year. Why didn't I?
Right.
But the challenge, Chris, is knowing when to put the train in the station. And we've seen athletes time and again not be sufficiently self-aware. I think if anything, I'd want to stop a year too early than a year too late. I don't want the final memory of me to be, man, you really did hang around too long. You shouldn't have done that one final season. You really should have just called it quits with the last one.
Yeah, well,
like Ben Roethlisberger, as Pete has just suggested.
Yeah, right. Well, listen, it's not here yet. We know that. I mean, that right off the bat. I mean, come on. You know, like you've heard me say a million times, you see it yourself. His arm is still top notch. It's up there with the top arms in the NFL. I mean, bottom line. And then his body. You know, I have this conversation with people all the time where it's just his body looks better now than it did 8 or 10 years ago. He's got more muscle in his legs and his arms than he did then. You know, he runs better now than he did then. So I don't see the end coming anytime soon, you know, and I mean, you're right. I'd probably be one of those guys too that go, I'd rather go a year too early than that like year of like, all right, man, it's a disaster. Whoa, he's just not good anymore. You know, we got to, it's over. You know, yeah, we saw that a little bit. Like Brett Favre, it all hit us like a boom, right? I mean, yeah, he could still throw it, but we're like, oh, man, it's just, it's done. He's taking a lot of hits. He can't make the plays he used to. Of course, Peyton Manning, you know, he got that his last year. It was that way. I mean, he got benched for Brock Osweiler in a number of games. But, of course, did get to play in the playoffs and won the Super Bowl and all that. But you knew it was over. Like, you knew it. You went, oh, my gosh. I mean, you know, he can't make any throws anymore. To where Brady, it's just we're not there yet. And, of course, we're not there yet as well, not only because of his physical ability, but the team around him is really damn good. And they can kind of, you know, stop or hide his weaknesses to a degree. And that's where I just go, I mean, he's definitely playing next year 100% with as good as he looks. And then we'll see where it goes from there.
I don't know if I've ever told you this before. I think I have, but I'm going to say it again.
Yeah.
Peyton Manning's final season of 2015.
Yeah.
Week one, right? A good friend of mine who happened to be outside the Broncos locker room witnessed an effort to get Peyton Manning limbered up and loosened up and work out the kinks, much like the oil can to the Tin Man. Mm-hmm. This person was stunned by how rickety and lame, not lame like, oh, you're lame, but I'm talking about just like not moving the way that he should before the first game of the season.
Right.
It was stunning to him, and Tom Brady's never had that issue, and he doesn't have that issue. And I was told 4 years ago, don't watch the arm, watch the legs. The moment the legs start to go, he's going to start getting hit.
I know.
Once he starts getting hit, he starts getting hurt, and eventually he utters the catchphrase made famous by Danny Glover in Lethal Weapon. I'm too old for this. Bleep.
Yes.
Yes. But he's not. He's not. Even though some of the guys chasing him around are literally half his age, he is not too old for this yet. So he keeps going, and we'll see how much longer it goes. It definitely goes through Sunday night when he returns to New England to take on the Buccaneers. Later in the show, we're going to have a draft of the most memorable NFL returns. I actually prepared for this one for a change, and I got some that I like. I'm looking forward to doing that. Meanwhile, we're looking forward to seeing what happens with Richard Sherman's visit to the Buccaneers. There'd been some flirtation between him and the Bucs. It's complicated by the fact that he doesn't have an agent. They have to do all the negotiating directly with him. And I think one of the reasons he hasn't signed with a team in the 6 months since free agency began is he's overvalued himself at this point in his career. And there's no one there to speak the hard truths to him about what he really is worth. And also at a certain point, hey, if this is all you're offering me, I'll just wait. And maybe he gets something closer to what he wanted from the Bucs because they're getting a little desperate.
Yeah, no, 100%. Sorry, I thought you might say something else there. Yeah, I mean,
no,
you're setting me up there. They do. They got injuries at the corner position. They could use another guy back there, certainly. You know, Richard Sherman, hey, it wasn't like bad play last year. You didn't look at it and go, oh my gosh, like he can't, it's over. It's done in the NFL. You know, I think there's more to it than that. But he certainly can add, you know, some experience. He's going to understand how to play zone coverages. He still tackles and is willing to do that even at his age. You know, you see he can still run and go. I mean, it makes a lot of sense. And, you know, for the people out there that, you know, go, oh, well, maybe they don't, you know, they don't want to deal with the personality. Like, listen, it does say something that the 49ers have corner issues. The Jets have corner issues, and they don't seem to really want Richard Sherman, right? But as we know, and
49ers don't want him. They don't. I mean, because I got 49ers fans who are like, oh, they signed Buster Screen, and Richard Sherman's out there, and they've had all these injuries. What's wrong with them?
Right.
They don't want him. They're done.
Three years
was enough.
Right.
They're done. They were almost done with him after 1 year.
I know.
If Jason Verrett doesn't get injured in the preseason of 2019 when Sherman ends up a second-team All-Pro and a Pro Bowler, thanks in part to the front seven and the team being as good as it was, but he still got his part of the deal done. He played well that year.
Yeah.
They were seriously thinking about cutting him before the 2019 season. 1 year was enough for them. So I'm getting all this pushback from 49ers fans. Why didn't they sign him? They want nothing to do with him. They'll say all the right things. They want nothing to do with him at this point.
Yeah,
and listen, they didn't really want anything to do with him 2 years ago.
No, listen, and I don't know why. I don't know what the reason is there. He's a strong personality. I mean, the same reason I think Seattle was a little bit done with him. I mean, yes. You know, hey, sometimes guys wear out their welcome when you're a really strong personality within the locker room, you know, on the practice field every day. That can wear on a team and an organization, but if there's two teams, but one right now, especially, I mean, New England or Tampa can pull this off, but Tampa especially. Bruce Arians has the magic touch with people. He's one of the best communicators in the sport as far as head coaches are concerned. There's no doubt about that. And then, again, they have a certain locker room and a guy in Brady where, you know, hey, everybody's going to step in line to a degree. Hey, it's about the bigger picture. Hey, Brady's doing this, so we better do this, or we better act like this. And that rubs off on the rest of the football team. And then, of course, Richard Sherman's going to be at a point of his career where, yeah, he knows he can't be too much of a big personality within a football team here. He's going to have to know, like, hey, I just got to fit in and be one of the guys here. I'm on my last leg, my last year or two in the NFL, and I just got to be a good teammate and do it that way. And he would know, and it makes a lot of sense. I wouldn't be shocked if his workout goes well that they sign him.
We first became nationally familiar with Richard Sherman 9 years ago after the Seahawks upset the Patriots, and there's the post from Richard Sherman. You mad, bro? He told me and Earl to see him after the game when they win. I found him after. You mad, bro? And I don't think that Tom Brady had an issue with it. He spoke about it in advance of Super Bowl 49. Of course, remember, Tom Brady admitted to the world on LeBron James' show on HBO back in June that 90% of the stuff he says is bullcrap. Remember the great opening argument
right
from the trial in My Cousin Vinny, which consisted of Vinny going to the jury and saying, everything that guy just said is bull bleep, thank you. And his entire opening argument was stricken from the record, but for the thank you. 90% of what Tom Brady says is bull bleep, and he's admitted it. So, but that's the other question, too. Does Brady really want him? Is Brady going to have a conversation with Jason Light where it's just the two of them saying, I don't know that I want that guy on the team? Or does he not care? Like, if it helps us win, yeah, I don't care.
Right.
As long as he doesn't disrupt what I'm trying to do.
I think so. I think that's more it. He doesn't care as long as he knows, you know, what mission we're on as a football team. And, hey, in the hierarchy of football, there's a pecking order in the locker room. Richard Sherman's going to know when he's down there for the workout who the king is around there. And that's Tom Brady. King Tom is there. So he's going to know that he's got to be, you know, act the right way, be the right way to Brady, all of those, you know, personality traits. So he's going to have to certainly fit in with the team 100%. You know, and let me just like tell you a quick story about that right there. I was working in New England during that time, and I just still, it's one of my, you know, not that I've hung out with Tom Brady, but of course I've been around him and talked to him a bunch when I was there and other times too. But that was one moment that I'll never forget I had with Brady. It was the week before we played Seattle. And of course I was, you know, the glorified bitch boy for the New England Patriots. I had to do everything. All right. Sorry. I don't know. Sorry, London. I just said that. But yes, that's what I was. I had to do dirty work. And I broke down the teams we were about to play, you know, 2 weeks out in advance, right? And so now on Saturdays, 8 days before you're going to play that opponent, I always had to put the scouting report of that team on Brady's locker. And so he could be done with the game on Sunday and then have that, take it home. And, you know, whether he wakes up Monday morning or Sunday night, he can kind of look over like, here's the next opponent. Oh, they do this. And he would occasionally ask me like, hey, what do they look like? This is just the start of the Legion of Boom, right? And everything like that, where I'm breaking games down and I'm going, I can't figure this out. I don't know what this coverage is. I'm really having issues. And I have to go down and ask like some of the the coaches going like, what coverage is this? I can't figure it out. He's playing a man when he goes this way, but it's zone when they go this way. And, of course, it was the invention of the Seattle scheme, and it was new to the league. And I was having a hard time figuring it out. But they were so talented. I just remember telling him, like, he goes, so what's Seattle look like? And I went, I was like, whoa. I was like, they're for real. I was like, it's the best defense in football. I've never seen anything like it. Like I was, and he was like, really? Really? They're that good? And, just one of those funny moments that I'll never forget where his eyes widened, like, and he was like, really? Okay, so it's going to be that kind of a challenge. And, of course, almost won that football game, but won the game that counted in that Super Bowl 49 a few years later.
Rewinding to what you said earlier, I think, as Pete pointed out, you need to apologize both to London, the rest of the UK, all of Ireland, America, and maybe the all world right. for that.
I'm
and
sorry.
I've been curious.
Right.
After Eli Manning decided to flash a couple of fingers to the world on Monday night and just kept rolling, I've wondered whether or not you'll feel emboldened by what Eli
did. It doesn't seem like he got in trouble. I should be able to do that, right?
Didn't get in trouble at all.
No.
He got celebrated for it.
Well, listen, I didn't mean any offense by that. That's literally what people up there used to call me. They used to call me that at times. You know, the players in the locker room, who, of course, I played against, and they saw me doing Vince Wilfork used to call me Crab. And I was like, I couldn't figure it out. He'd be like, hey, Crab. And I was like, why does he call me Crab? And then finally Gerard Mayo told me, he goes, because you're a bottom feeder. You know, you're the bottom feeder in the organization right now. Yeah, so I could never put that together. But, yeah, I had a few nicknames like that when I was working there.
I'll admit I was a little nervous in the lead up to that where that was going to go, given the choice of word.
We're
all right,
good.
Let's take a break.
Yep, we made it.
Note. When we return, Mike Tomlin is not panicking about the 1-2 Pittsburgh Steelers. Should he be? We'll discuss that next here on PFT Live.
I think the good thing about that win was not only did the Steelers feel that, everybody in the country felt it, because the last plays of the game for them, they gave up. You could see it. They had three drops in a row, and that's for a team to see that is giving us more power, giving us the antidote to know how good we are, you know? So for a team to just lay down like that before the game is over, because no matter what, no matter how much we're losing by or whatever the case may be, I know me and I know us, we're not giving up. We're going to continue to try to make plays and make something happen. But they portrayed it to the whole nation on TV with what they were about and how they gave up. So, we just got to take advantage.
I don't care about Tyler Boyd's opinion regarding what transpired at any point in that game. Like I said, after the game, and it includes him, I tip my cap to that team and that organization for their performance and win. And I proceed moving on to the next challenge. And, we better play better the next time we see them. That's always our mentality. I care less about, what people say that are not involved in us and with us and function and understand who and what we are. He's entitled to his opinion, but, I don't have to respond to it.
He just did respond to it. I don't get it. And I would tend to give the opinion of someone who is out there on the field a little more credence than a writer, a talking head like us. I mean, we see it from afar. Tyler Boyd saw it up close. He felt it. You can feel that, Chris. You know when a team has given up.
Sure.
You know when a team has punched out and said it's over, it's done, today's not our day. That's not uncommon. That's the thing. People got surprised by that. Oh, they gave up. Yeah, teams do, but that's why you try to break the will of your opponent.
Right.
If you can do it in that moment, they react like human beings.
Right.
They give up. They yield. They're done. They're getting too old for this bleep.
Yeah.
That's what happens.
Right. Yeah, it's 24-10. There was not a lot of time left. It was over. They got a little sloppy. Also, too, let's think about Pittsburgh. They were in a situation like that, was that last week? And they saw their wide receiver, Deontay Johnson, get hurt in a meaningless spot there, too. So that can, add up to people going like, hey, it's over. I'm not going over the middle and catching this ball and getting it crushed right now. The game is over. So there is that aspect. The thing that I think is shocking to me, and like Tyler Boyd's a really good football player, no doubt about that. But Like, you know, and I know you wrote about this the other day. They are going to have to play them again, okay? So why say that? Now you've – I mean, this is Pittsburgh. I mean, they love crap like that. They love it. They love bulletin board material and just another reason to like, oh, we can – let's go knock this guy out, you know? And I mean that within the rules, all right? But also, like – doesn't Cincinnati remember what how like invigorated their team was last year with the Juju Smith TikTok dancing on
great
the
point.
Right and look how fired up the Bengals were on that game in that game. I think it was a Thursday night game or maybe it was a Monday yes. night game, right? But they were fired up.
Monday
it motivated
night.
Them. And you know, that's why I would just go, "Man, don't forget about that because now you're going to light a fire under them when you see them again."
I made that point recently, and I can't remember the context of it, but just the idea of the social media crowing that goes on now, and even though it's all meaningless because the players and the coaches aren't involved, you do play the team again. If it's a team in your division, like the Philadelphia-Dallas stuff, they are going to come around again and play the Eagles in Philly. Don't do too much of a victory lap after
right.
part one of a two-part series, and it's week 12, Sunday, November 28, 1 o'clock Eastern, Steelers at Bengals. So, yes, the Bengals will see the Steelers again. And, you know, how many teams have we seen over the years who get wounded for whatever reason early? They get criticized. They get called out.
Right.
Everyone talks about how badly they suck. And that becomes their motivation. They're on the fly, legitimate, not the concocted phony stuff. It's real. Everyone thinks we stink.
Right.
Not Tom Brady lying about, oh, everybody thinks we were going to lose. Well, who? Nobody thought you were going to lose. This is real. Everybody now thinks the Steelers stink. And when that falls into your lap, you take it and you take full advantage of it. Just like the Packers have the last 2 weeks after everyone said
That's
after
right.
they stunk in week one, you stink.
Right. Yeah. No, you have... You know, all of that going on, let alone now the coaching staff who's uptight anyways, and they're pushing you, and practice has been edgy all week because they just want to win and we got to play better. So they're pushing guys on the field. And then you add in all that noise that you're talking about, you know, from social media, the news, whatever else is out there, their friends telling them, hey, you guys look like crap out there, to where, yeah, it gives you like, you know, a big chip on your shoulder going forward, and it can rally and unite a football team. And that's, hey, I'd always be scared of that with the Pittsburgh Steelers. You know, they're one of those teams that, you know, I would tread lightly. Don't piss them off too much. They still got a lot of big, bad dudes on that football team.
Yeah, and they didn't have TJ Watt this weekend. He may be back when they play the Packers this week. Speaking of the Packers, a hell of a game that is, a very impactful game for the Steelers. So many think that the Steelers should be mashing the panic button. Here's Mike Tomlin from yesterday on whether he thinks it's time for the Steelers to panic.
Man, we're not going to push the panic button. What do I mean by the panic button? You know, we're not going to dramatically change who and what we are at this juncture. We're not resistant to change for the purposes of getting better, but we're not going to be so unsteady that we move away from our compass, the identity that we worked hard to develop and will continue to work hard to develop, and the emphasis on a style of play, whatever that may be in all three phases.
Well, and really, what can you do? Short of benching all of your starters or most of your starters or plenty of key players, they earned those spots for a reason. They're better than the alternatives. It's not like they're going to go out and trade for a bunch of guys. You know, we are into the changing the tire on a moving car phase of a football season. There's only so much you can do. You got to make the car go with the tires that it has because you've already decided they're your best tires, Chris.
Yeah, no doubt. And, you know, I know everybody wants to talk about maybe the quarterback change or anything there. No.
But who would you go? But who?
I know.
Who are you
Rudolph, Haskins,
to?
Right. I know. I understand that. I mean, I'm with you. There's no proven commodity there yet. You know, Pittsburgh, they're going to be, they're loyal to Big Ben. He's done too many good things from that standpoint. Yeah, they don't know that necessarily benching him is going to fix their issues. I don't think you can just clearly state that. They have issues. You know, yeah.
He'd quit if they would bench him. He'd quit. He'd walk away.
He might.
I would.
Well, the other thing that people just, you got to remember too, that alone, that move alone is going to be such a distraction to the team. And that's all that everybody's going to ask every player on the team about for a week or two, to where you could end up, you know, losing a game or two because it's become such a spectacle about, whoa, they benched Big Ben. Yes, it hasn't been good. There's no doubt. I mean, this interception is probably the worst interception I've ever seen Big Ben throw. I mean, that was just pitiful. You know, I think we talked about it a little yesterday. Yeah, there's no feel in the pocket. He's not seeing the field well. He's not throwing the ball well. You know, I think he's unrealistic in his abilities to move in the pocket. The big thing with me with Pittsburgh is they just got to realize who they are, and that's Big Ben. That's really Big Ben has to. It's ugly. You're going to have to win ugly, and you got to be prepared for that. They could have won that game last weekend. His mistakes set up two short field touchdowns for the Bengals. You know, they weren't moving the ball in the Steelers' defense other than one real drive the whole game. So, you know, I think he's just got to adjust his mindset to what they are. And I mean that by he as in Big Ben to go, wait, we're not that great offensively. I'm not that great anymore. You know, let's hope we can work on running the ball and protecting better and I'll get better. But just play through your defense. And winning 13-10 or 16-13, like I said yesterday, is really what they should strive for more weeks than not.
Can he humble himself?
I know. That's a big question.
To allow that. Right. To happen where he is game manager.
Yeah.
He is guy who is simply trying to not screw it up. Hey, Ben, if you just don't screw it up, we'll have a chance to win. Let's not try to make these throws. Let's just hand it off to Najee Harris. Let's keep throwing short passes to Najee Harris. Just you stay out of the way. You let the defense handle things. I mean, that's how they beat the Bills.
I know.
The defense was so good. You throw in a block punt for a touchdown.
Right.
And it compensates for an offense. Now, the offense is still a work in progress.
Yes.
And that's something that Ben warned us all about before the season. It's going to take some time. The question is, how much better can it really get? I don't know. We'll find out. But when you see some of the plays like what we've seen from Ben Roethlisberger, and he's 39 and a half, and I think that half makes a difference when you've been beaten around as much as he has over the course of his career, and he's clearly not on the TB12 method because when it was reported that he is, he made sure he said, no, it's not. That's not what I'm doing. I'm still eating pork rinds and drinking beer. I just think that pork rinds, under the right circumstances, are actually highly underrated. Anyway, now I want some pork rinds. Anyway, PFT Live brought to you by Dandy's Pork Rinds. if he just doesn't have it and he has to take a back seat, I don't see a scenario based on the first 3 weeks, and a lot can change. I don't see a scenario where at some point between now and the end of the season, he doesn't just kind of slip onto injured reserve and that's the last we see of him. You know, not that he's going to quit.
Yeah.
He's not going to storm out like AB.
Right.
I think that what would happen is if they decide at some point they want to make a change, he goes on injured reserve. Or maybe he self-selects himself, as we would say, for injured reserve before it ever gets to the point where he would get benched.
Yeah, I don't deny that. I don't, you know. I mean, I don't think it's going to come to that because I think, you know, again, I think we talked about this a little last week. You know, the Rooneys, they're a lot like the Maras. They're going to be loyal to a guy who's just given them everything for the last, you know, 15, 16 years, 17 years, how many years it's been now. So that, you know, I think that's a true aspect. The thought I keep coming back to a little bit is more of like almost 2015 Peyton Manning and the Broncos to a degree, where they have to manage him to a degree. Don't ask him to be a game manager. Just manage him, but don't really tell him. Oh, it's 3rd and 14? Whoa. Okay, wait. This could be a disaster for Big Ben. He could still think he's Big Ben from 2010. Let's run the draw. Let's just throw a screen. Let's just run it up the middle. Who cares? Punt it out. We'll play field position. We'll be better the next drive. They might have to just be willing to do that. Oh, you know, hey, yeah, it's, you know, we're going to get in the shotgun. Forget it. Let's try to run it up the middle for 3 or 4 here. We don't trust them right now. You know, I do think that they might have to manage him without telling him he has to manage the game is kind of the way I look at it a little bit.
And you have to wonder at what point he realizes what's going on. And at what point does he say, you know, if I can't do what I did last year, I don't want to be here. I didn't come back to be a shell of what I used to be. I came back because I thought I could still do it. This gets back to what we were talking about earlier with Tom Brady. You don't want to hang around so long that you're no longer any good. And hey, he could turn it around dramatically. We saw how bad the Packers were week one, and then boom, week two, week three, a completely different team. The problem is the Steelers have done it in reverse. They surprised us week one. They had a pair of home games that were huge disappointments. And now they go to Green Bay. Good luck with that, Pittsburgh Steelers. You've got the Packers, the Broncos, and the Seahawks the next three games. All of a sudden, the Broncos are not cupcakes. Hey, Chris, these next three games, I think, are critical because look at what they have week seven. Bye.
Yeah.
That could be the literal goodbye. I'm telling you.
Yeah, I hear you.
These next three games go the way that Sunday did. Week seven could be when Ben goes on injured reserve. Ben walks away. Ben says, I've had enough. Ben says, I'm getting too old for this bleep. Week seven looms large if they don't find something the next 3 weeks. And let's say they lose to the Packers and the Seahawks but beat the Broncos. Let's say the Seahawks, prime time, Sunday Night Football, huge crowd. And the Seahawks are kind of struggling now.
Yeah.
But if the Seahawks go to Pittsburgh and stick it to them, that's going to be a tough one to rebound from. 2-4, that's not going to be easy. Now, hey, they could win the next three games and fire up the engines and everything's fine. Like you said, they're a dangerous team when they're wounded and threatened. They got plenty of great players still, especially on defense. But the offense is a problem.
Yeah.
And I don't know how you fix it after what we've seen the past couple of weeks.
No, I don't think they're going to be able to fix it other than just slowly maybe getting better at run blocking and the run game and you know, finding the sweet spot of, like, I think we're talking about just managing Big Ben without telling him we're managing you. You know, listen, I don't expect them to win this week. Yeah, I don't. You know, this is one team where, you know, the great defense and everything they do is not going to be able to dominate to me a little bit because Rodgers is just, you know, he's too good at making quick decisions, getting the ball out of his hands, reading defenses to where maybe their defense can't impose just their physical will like they can against most teams. But you do look at, like, Denver, Seattle, even the way Cleveland plays to a degree, Chicago, Detroit after that, they can get back in the mix of this after that. They can beat the Broncos. They can beat the Seahawks for sure. I mean, you said it. Denver's on the rise and certainly playing good. But the Seahawks got issues too. And their style of play matches up with what the Steelers do. Oh, you want to run the ball and just take a shot down the field every now and then? Okay, we'll smash your running game and we'll play some cool zone coverages downfield. You won't be able to throw it deep. So I'm not counting them out yet. Not that I'm sitting here going they're going to the Super Bowl, but out of the playoffs or that conversation yet, I'm not doing that yet. No, not with Pittsburgh, not with that defense and Mike Tomlin.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. And we've stepped into that bear trap before, where we write a team off. It's easy, right? There's too many teams to follow. The more that we can move from the ledger of contender to pretender, the easier it is to focus on the teams that really are going to be factors down the stretch. So it's good for us, right? When we can say, forget about the Jets, forget about the Jaguars, forget about the Steelers, forget about this team. That makes it easier. Because then we can focus on the teams that matter. The Steelers, for now, don't give up on them.
Right.
Don't overlook them. They are still the Steelers. And we've seen them turn it around in the past. Let's go ahead and take a break. When we return, some feats of strength, the best blocks of week three. We'll do that next here on PFT Live. Getting an alert here. Important update coming in. New Simsism.
Simsisms. Stuck up.
The Bears coaches kind of never really stuck up for Mitch Trubisky either. From the start of the Mitchell Trubisky era there with Matt Nagy, there was already excuses being made.
Whoa, baby.
Stuck up. Yeah, that stuck is up. Like a baby. That's like something a three-year-old says. I stuck up for him, Mom.
Simsism.
That was just yesterday, I think. I don't know. They're all kind of blending together on me. Stuck up. Got some email reaction on that as well. Haven't heard from our friend, I think it was Greg, the father of Eleanor, with the man with the small head monologue.
Yes, but, yes, thank you.
I need to check my email. maybe she can relate. Maybe even she said, What did he say? Stuck up? What does that mean? I haven't said that since I was two.
Yeah, right. All right. I have no defense for myself there.
We're going to do feats of strength later. For now, I want to get to something that lingers from Monday night. And Cowboys fans, it's so funny how they get mad about things. Like, we beat the Eagles by 20 points. Why are you talking about Mike McCarthy mismanaging the clock at the end of the first half? Because he did. That's why. We're not making it up. It was obvious. Peyton Manning was yelling at the TV on the Manning cast to call a timeout as seconds were ticking away. And the Cowboys, when they had the Eagles in a bad spot, we talked about it yesterday, they don't call the timeouts. They took two timeouts to the half. They could have gotten the ball back.
Right.
Here's Jerry Jones on his Tuesday appearance on 105.3 The Fan in Dallas, commenting on the perception/reality that Mike McCarthy has issues with clock management.
Other teams have issues with clock management. That's part of the game. Let's cut things some slack and realize that if you do enough plays, we were critical of Garrett when he was here. And don't you think that goes with the territory?
Yes.
That's my point. I know firsthand Mike's capabilities and have know how he approaches it, the logic that he uses, and I'm not a bit concerned about his ability to manage a tight situation.
What goes with the territory is that you will be criticized fairly when you mismanage the clock. Not every team is mismanaging the clock. Bill Belichick never mismanages the clock. Sure, other teams do. They're bad teams.
Right.
It's happened
a few times with McCarthy over the last two years. So that's the point. That's why it gets pointed out. It's a thing. It's a repetitive thing. Sorry to cut you off, but that's where I don't understand people's reaction.
Happened at the end of the Chargers game. They still won thanks to Greg Zuerlein's 56-yard field goal that should have been a lot closer than that, but for the mismanagement of the clock. And then it happened late in the first half on Monday night when they're up 20-7. And they were in a position where they could have gotten the ball back, run a few plays, gotten down the field, and made it 23-7 or 27-7. And, hey, they got lucky. They delivered the dagger early in the third quarter with the pick six by Trayvon Diggs. And then it's 27-7, and you don't have to worry about it. But you never know how the rest of the game is going to play out. It was a lost opportunity to get the ball and possibly score more points. That's exactly what it was. That's the thing. He didn't articulate any reason for it. Oh, I was content to go to the locker room with the lead. You would have had the lead if they would have scored a touchdown.
Yeah.
So that doesn't hold water. And I don't want the explanation from the owner to be other teams bungle the clock too.
I'm with you, Mike. Yeah. I mean, listen, we saw it. I mean, I'm going to say two or three times last year during games. You know, we saw questionable decisions his last year in Green Bay, taking the ball out of Aaron Rodgers' hands with a 4th-and-1 against the Seattle Seahawks. You know, there was another, you know, kicked a field goal or something like that. There's been a few. But last year, opening night against the Rams, you know, I remember that game. There was an issue where they kicked a field goal and should have gone for a touchdown late. This has been a little bit of a theme. That's why people are bringing it up. And we're not saying it. Like, that's where, like, I don't understand. Like, you and I, at least, we're not talking about it to go like, oh, here's a chance to crap on McCarthy, so let's do it. No, we're talking about, we do it out of like how you explained the other day. We watch a lot of football. We watch football in our free time. Even when it's not on, we sit there and watch it on our computer. And we try to look at teams and go, oh, wait, this team's good, but they do this. Hey, fan base, you should worry about this. Your team does this. It's not good. And that's one of those areas.
They don't like it when we talk about the things they should worry about.
I know.
They're worried about it, and they don't want us to talk about it.
Not until it becomes a disaster.
Just do this. Right.
And then not until it becomes like 6 or 7 games of like, oh, now they blew it. And then people want to pile on then. But, yeah, we're just, hey, McCarthy's really good coach. We know that. Does a lot of good things, no doubt. Dallas is playing good football. We're just pointing out that this has been a thing that has happened a lot in Mike McCarthy the last 2 years, and that was an opportunity where it was blatant, and like we explained yesterday, the strength of your team is your offense. You have a chance to really close the door and end the game on Philadelphia. They're not capable of passing in Philadelphia very good. So now you're going to get make the game into a passing game, and it'll be all in your favor. And that's all we were pointing out, and that's why Peyton Manning was flipping out too on the Manning cast.
As Chris or Pete or someone else tweeted from Chris's Twitter account on Monday night, another reason Aaron Rodgers is the greatest, he had to overcome that clock management for a decade. Did you actually?
No, I don't ever. No, I can't. No, but Pete, you know, Pete, I texted Pete. Pete then takes a picture of the tweet before he sends it out and does it. Yeah, I'm done looking at social media. I hate social media. I hate it. It's just all negative, dumb idiots talking most of the time, and I can't take it. So I don't want to look and got to ruin my game where I start to look at some guy's stupid comment, and I got to feel like I got to put him in his place. So, no, I didn't look at it.
That's what I love.
I know you do. That's usually when responses. I get your popcorn emoji. That's when you you send me that. They go, oh, I'm watching, and this is fun. I'm enjoying. And that's when I know I've gotten myself into a Twitter war.
And I've actually had access to some of your own tweets that were deleted but preserved for future enjoyment.
Right.
Those are even better. here's the only argument that could be made by McCarthy. This is what he could have said, maybe should have said, assuming that this is what his thought process is. I take you back to January 17 of 1999. On that day, the Minnesota Vikings hosted the Atlanta Falcons in the NFC Championship. The Vikings, coincidentally, were leading that game 20-7 late in the first half. Well in command. Everything clicking. It's all working. And you know what? They're going to go for the dagger. They're going to go for the death blow. They're going to dial up a deep ball to Randy Moss and maybe pop one open like they had all year and make it 27-7. And it's over at halftime. Randall Cunningham drops back to pass. Chuck Smith comes around the edge, pops the ball out. Falcons recover. One play later, it's 20-14 at the half,
right.
And it's a far different vibe.
Right.
So what McCarthy could have said was, look, we get the ball back. There could be some fluke thing that happens, just like that fluke that happened that gave them their first seven, their only seven of the game. That's the only time they'd scored. I don't want them going into halftime thinking they have life because we were outclassing them.
Yes.
I don't want to even give them an opening to feel at halftime like they have a chance because I am confident we go into the locker room at 20-7. There's no way we're losing this game because we're operating on a higher level than them. Now, we understand we have to play them later in the season. We understand that they could be better that night. But tonight, I felt like where I was on the sidelines, we were the better team. And I wasn't going to take the chance of giving them a free 7 points because I knew that we'd prove that we were the better team in the second half. Oh, and by the way, we did.
Yeah.
That's how he should have responded,
sure.
If it's the truth.
Yeah, no, I think that's, hey, part of being a coach is making sure you got your answers straight when you go into a press conference. Make sure you're sending the right message to the media, the fans, and then your own team. To just know that. And yeah, I don't think that response or his response was one that we felt like, oh, well, that makes a whole lot of sense. Or there just wasn't enough, you know, to back it up other than, oh, I'm good. Or, I'm fine. I'm fine here. I'm good with that. You know, and yeah, we just want to hear a little bit more. And if you hear a little bit more with conviction and there's some real thought and you got something to say, people back off and go, okay, hey, I might not agree with it, but he thought it out and that was a good answer. So, okay.
We talked a lot this week about the failure of the NFL to provide any type of transparency or explanation on the controversial calls. Maybe it is better to say nothing than to say something that makes people say, what the hell is he talking about? I was content to take the lead. Well, you would have taken the lead if they would have scored. You'd still have the lead. So, I think it's a critical component of a coach's job. The coach is the liaison directly to the fan base. And the coach can go a long way toward arming the fans with the ammunition they use then to respond to guys like us.
Right.
Because if you provide a compelling argument, first of all, maybe you win us over and we say, oh, that, yeah, well, we understand what he was doing now. It's a great explanation. All right. Well done, Mike McCarthy. We apologize for questioning you during the game. That's a great explanation. Thank you very much for that. They need to understand that that's a big part of their job, that if you can't get media and fans to understand why you did the things you did, if you don't have time for that, if you don't put the time into it, then it does make something into a thing. And Mike McCarthy's clock mismanagement is now a thing.
Yeah, it is. You're right. It's a thing. And it's going to be something people watch on every week. And watch every week. He's going to have to, you know, make sure not only one is he on his game in that department, but on his game, you know, whether that's with, you know, their media guy after the game to go, hey, you know, what's his name? Rich Dalrymple, right? For him to sit there and go, hey, Mike, people on social media are questioning this. Let's get the answer right. What would you, you know, that's part of it too. And having that strong answer there. Yeah, some of the great coaches of all time were great at that. I always think of my dad's coach, Bill Parcells. You know, with things like that, he would always sit down and, you know, explain it to the New York media. This is what I was thinking. And he'd really get personal with them so they could understand where his thought was. And then you went, well, see, Tuna, Big Tuna knows what he's doing. Okay, that's why he's the big fish and he knows what's going on here. He had a great answer for it. And then people back off. And that is part of being a head coach in the NFL.
It's a critical part of it, especially in this day and age where everyone can react in real time to everything that is done, everything that is said, every decision that is made. And it isn't all that difficult. If an idiot schmuck like me can come up with the explanation that I came up with, surely Mike McCarthy and the other 31 NFL head coaches can do it like that. They just have to want to do it. And I think that's ultimately what it comes down to. Do they respect the fact that those voices out there are a lot more powerful? Even though they're not signing your checks, they're influencing the people who do. Let's take a quick break. We got to do power rankings and feats of strength. We'll do that when this Wednesday edition of PFT Live continues right after this.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.